show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Bouncing ball, Moustakas, fair ball. Sets, throws, Royals win it. Kansas City, you've got a World Series.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a big show for you. I, of course, am your host, Jeff Herr, but before we get to everything...
In a world where your favorite... where fake Twitter accounts will have you believe that your favorite player could be on your favorite team, one man...
Guys, this is fake.
...stands between you and misinformation. He is the sword in the darkness. He is the watcher on the wall. He is... Michael Engel, Twitter detective.
Yeah.
How you doing tonight, Mike?
That was good. I like that.
Thank you. I kind of screwed up that beginning there, but we're all right.
That's okay. That was not bad. That was...
I decided to expand my vocabulary a little bit this week.
That was impressive.
I'm glad you liked it, you know?
Kermit the Frog in there?
I had to do... it wasn't a Michael Engel voice, that's for sure, but I had to do something.
Okay.
So I...
Well, that's why it sounded like Kermit the Frog, I guess.
In Michael Engel Twitter detective movie, you'll be played by Kermit, so...
I think that's a good movie.
I'd go see it.
I would, too. It'd be great.
But the reason for that intro is because, as we all know, it's trade season. And trade season means fake Twitter accounts putting out fake information. But, Mike, I have some real information for you that pretty much everybody who's a Royals fan, everybody in all of baseball knows by now, that we're going to discuss right here. Johnny freaking Cueto is a Kansas City Royal. Mike, tell me, how floored were you when the news came through that it was official?
I think that that's his actual middle name now, just freaking.
I think so.
It was pretty exciting. I mean, the last, I don't know, month or so, it's been pretty clear that the Royals might be players for him. And you had to kind of figure out, okay, where do they actually stand? Did they really want to go for that guy? And then a lot of people kind of felt that as the Royals' lead grew in the Central and as they kind of, you know, stood out in front of the AL, that maybe they don't need this guy because they've got a pretty good road to, you know, the next step to the playoffs and everything. But the Royals seem to have decided that, no, they want to go get that guy, that number one guy, and Johnny Cueto's it. So, I was at the game Saturday, and that's when some of the first kind of reports that this was even happening started coming up, just because it was you know, the whole Johnny Cueto thing with the supposed medical report problem or whatever. And so, you know, went to bed and just kind of felt like, okay, maybe something's going to come. And then the next day there were reports that, okay, this is done. And then Dayton Moore and the Reds were like, well, we don't know, because they had to notify the players. But it was basically like a waiting game of like, okay, I'm 95% sure that this is actually happening, but there's that 5% that something can go crazy and mm-hmm. it doesn't. So I was just like, until I actually saw it, it was cool. And so I was listening to the radio broadcast, and it was like the third inning or something. And they had like an 8-year-old kid in there who won a contest to broadcast with Denny and Fiziok.
Right.
And so the kid was doing a great job for one. But in the middle of the call, you could hear Mike Swanson in the background. The Royals have completed a trade with Cincinnati, sending John Cueto, you know. And so basically he announces it right there. And that's, you know, like fist pump, yeah, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It was pretty sweet, just all in all, because that's the guy. I mean, Johnny Cueto, I mean, he's a top five pitcher, arguably, in the entire major leagues.
All of baseball. Yeah. I mean, if you there's a few things I want to discuss, but one thing, if you remember, if you've been listening to the show for a while, Mike and I had an entire show dedicated last year to basically the question, is James Shields an ace? And the conclusion was, no, that he's a number one starter, but not an ace, and there is a distinction. Well, if we're going to apply the exact same logic to Johnny Cueto, he's an ace.
Yeah.
Legit. He's that – I mean, there's a very small step above James Shields, and it's not very big, doesn't hold many pitchers, but it's there, mm-hmm. and Johnny Cueto is up there. So – that's not a slight at all to James Shields.
No.
Because he's a fantastic pitcher. But Johnny Cueto is just better. And that's just the way it is. Not a ton, but enough to separate. And the Royals were best team in the American League and the favorites to win the AL pennant again, even without Cueto.
Right.
So now, you know, that puts them, you know, way in the driver's seat. They've already got a 7.5 game lead as of tonight. And as we record this on Monday night, they're winning 4-0 against the Indians. And is it the first inning still? Second inning?
It's the second bottom inning? Of the second.
Now. Bottom of the second. So, yeah. So they could extend that lead a little bit depending on what the Twins do. And they're 11 games ahead. Was it 11 or 11 and a half?
I think 11 and a half.
11 and a half ahead of the Tigers, which again could also be more. They're hopefully going to run away and hide. With this divisional race here, mm-hmm. and man, it's an amazing feeling. So many times we've been on the wrong side of this trade. You know, it wasn't midseason for Greinke, but it was still the same kind of an idea. You know, not going to compete. Let's get what we can. So on and so forth, you know, go back to, we don't need to rehash all the trades, but going back, you know, it just Johnny Damon, you know, or Carlos Beltran, Jermaine Dye, like they're all, you know, the list goes on.
Yeah.
But
it's unprecedented. It's,
yeah,
the Royals,
it absolutely is.
Have not made this kind of a deal in season. Like, I mean, one of the biggest deals in a long time was the Shields one, which was in the winter. But I tried to look through year by year, like transactions at the deadline. There really aren't that many really big transactions. I mean, one, 30 years of a playoff drought will do that. I mean, 2003, they were active, but they didn't really get big names. They got, you know, Rondell White in August, and they got Curtis Laskanik in early July, and they got Graham Lloyd somewhere in there. And so, you know, it was help for that roster, but it wasn't like they went out and got Jason Giambi. At that point, or like whoever the big guys were, you know, some of the big names. Right. So for the Royals to get to this point where they are going and getting arguably the biggest guy in on the trading block. I mean, Cole Hamels is maybe another one. Maybe he's more highly regarded because he has a couple years of team control. But Cueto is, I mean, he's got a better ERA plus than Hamels. So, I mean, by that measure, he's a bigger guy.
I think, I mean, historically speaking, you would probably say Cole Hamels is the better pitcher and the better bet. But, like, right now, today, I think you'd probably be split from most GMs on who you would take over the two and maybe even lean more towards Cueto. You know, if you're in a position like the Royals for this season,
mm-hmm.
The only pitcher who's been even quasi-mentioned as available that would be theoretically bigger than Cueto is David Price. And the Tigers still appear to be waffling on whether or not they want to be buyers or sellers. You know, do they want to double down and go all in and try and make a charge like the Royals did last year? Or do they want to finally sell off and kind of retool a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and try and build back up their system, because it's barren, because they've been making these types of trades for years now to try and get over after 2012 when they lost in the World Series to the Giants. But after they lost that World Series, it, you know, they've been clamoring to get back, and you always hear these things. They have a, you know, really old owner who wants to, mm-hmm. you know, not to be morbid, but wants to see a World Series championship before he dies, that type of thing. Like, you know, you right. never know what the Tigers are going to do.
And they'll put the money into it. They got Prince Fielder on a big money, deal. Yep. They've signed Victor Martinez to a big extension. They got Verlander. and Miguel Cabrera and, you know, all these
guys. Verlander is going to be getting $25 million a year for the next 7 years or something. Never knows. So,
yeah. They're in, so they have decisions to make, especially when injuries and just bad performance have not put them in the spot that they wanted to be in. But, like, a guy like Cueto, I mean, he's tied with Price in ERA+. They're both at 125 among active pitchers, which is fourth in all of baseball. Like, the only guys who are better than those two are Kershaw, Felix, and Adam Wainwright. So, I mean, that's the level of guy that you're talking about here. That's the caliber of pitcher that the Royals have gotten. And that's with Cueto pitching in Cincinnati, which is a home run prone kind of place. It's not friendly to pitchers. And my theory is if you bring in any pitcher, don't care who it is, you put him in front of the Royals defense and put him in Kauffman Stadium half the time, they're going to benefit from it. And so he goes from being, and the other thing with Cueto is that he's allowed like the lowest batting average against in the last 5 years or something like that. Just doesn't give up hits, doesn't walk guys. You know, strikes guys out. I mean, he is a legitimate ace, and now you're putting him in front of the best defense in the league.
Yeah, that's
so.
That's,
I mean,
the thing.
Is he going to give up anything? I don't know.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, he's leaving Cincinnati, but he's also, you know, leaving a bad defense and not only getting an upgrade, but getting the best defense in the league. So yeah. There's typically, when you're moving from NL to the AL, you typically see a bit of a at the very least, a small increase really in ERA and a lot of metrics, simply because, you know, without the pitcher in the lineup, you're not getting that free out every nine batters, basically, mm-hmm. which is, you know, such and such pitcher is a good hitter, you know, whatever. So there's some pitchers that can hit. But for the most part,
you might face
80% of the time, yeah,
maybe.
You know, 80-90% of the time, it's basically a free out. So that causes a little bit of an imbalance there. But Cueto may be one of the few players who actually decreases going from NL to the AL, if for no other reason than Kauffman's going to give a pitcher a bump, typically, depending on I shouldn't say typically, but depending on which park they come from. In this case, it would be a bump, but then against the best defense in baseball. Is going to be another one. So, you know, he could play exactly the same and actually wind up with a lot of lower metrics. And one of the interesting things about Cueto is he's one of those kind of rare circumstances where we've talked about him before on this show, both hitters and pitchers, that can outperform his fielding independent pitching stat because he typically has shown an ability to sustain a low BABIP, you know, and that's something that, you know, especially with, I mean, that's only going to continue to go down with the Royals defense. But it's something where we talked about it with Bruce Chinn when he was still around. You know, he was a pitcher that, even though his skill was lesser, he could still consistently have that lower BABIP, and it wasn't something that was an indicator of regression, because eventually a pitcher just kind of is what they are. And if you look at Cueto, I mean, he's got a career 280, and typically most pitchers hover closer to the 300 range, so that's pretty good. But then his last 3 years,
he's been great.
You know, it's been 236 in 2013. Now, that was a bit of an injury plug, only 60 innings. But then 238 in 2014, he was healthy all year, 243 innings in 2014, by the way. And he's at 234 this year. So consistently, you know, pretty consistent with those last few years. And I mean, you even go back and look at his worst year. Let's see. Let's check this out. His worst year, he had a 4.8 ERA in 2008, right? His rookie year.
His rookie year, yeah.
And even that, he still had a 298 BABIP. He's never had one above 300 in the major leagues. So it's quite impressive. I mean, no matter what metric you want to look at, he hasn't had an ERA above 2.82 since 2011, and his high, you know, and 2010 it was a 3.64, which is still really good. So after his first couple of years dealing with some, you know, growing pains of getting into, you know, the major leagues and everything, then he's really kind of settled down and righted the ship. In the last 6 years, he's been one of the best pitchers in baseball.
Yeah, and he's just going to look better. It's just amazing that they've got him coming here. And we saw what James Shields did for this kind of staff, where he was very clearly the leader of the staff for 2 years, really seemed to help everybody out. The other thing is the Royals are like second to last in the majors in innings pitched by their starters. And some of that is, you know, some weird games from Danny Duffy. Some of it is injuries to Yordan Ventura or
Jeremy Guthrie giving up 11 innings in the, or 11 runs in the first inning.
Right, just stuff like that. And just generally, like, guys who get to five innings and kind of stop. But also that the Royals are quick to go to their bullpen. And with a guy like Cueto, he averages 7 innings a start. You know, not that he does that regularly, that's his average. So
yeah,
he's got the opportunity there to really perform and give the Royals bullpen an off day every now and then, pretty much. Moreover, he's also a guy who in his career in interleague play against the AL has really performed well. So, I mean, it's just there's little downside to any of this. Really?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, and I'm glad you brought up similar to Shields last year, because that was another point that I wanted to discuss, because I you know, the initial layer of this trade is the obvious one. Johnny Cueto
is a really good pitcher,
going to make them better.
Right.
He makes every team in the league better, and it just so happens this time it's the Royals. Now, if you ask me, you know, and you haven't, this hasn't been anything heard from the organization or whatever, but I think this is just kind of a little inkling that I've had, and that is that if you peel that layer back, an additional layer here is the Royals saw, and one part of the reasons why they targeted James Shields 2 years ago was because of not only his skill, but his leadership ability. We all kind of heard and everything about the leadership ability, and you know, I think, you know, on this show I'm guilty of it as much as anybody. Sometimes I kind of dismiss it, even though we've given a lot of credit to clubhouse chemistry and stuff this year. But I do think this year has shown how valuable James Shields was in that regard. Because, you know, you saw him last year, you know, he would talk to Danny Duffy and Yordan Ventura and whoever, you know, in between innings and stuff when they were pitching and maybe struggling a little bit. And it was good to have that calming presence there. And so I think an additional layer of this trade is Cueto coming in and hopefully being that similar calming presence. He and Edinson Volquez are very close from their time in Cincinnati, from what we've heard. So having those two as veteran pitchers together can maybe, you know, trickle down to some of the other pitchers, Danny Duffy, Yordan Ventura. Maybe that can help, similar to how James Shields helped. And especially because, you know, I think this is a very pivotal point in Yordan Ventura's career right here. He showed he was very, very good yesterday. After some rocky starts and coming back from possibly or theoretically being sent down.
Right.
Technically. Well, yeah, technically sent down.
They probably never left his house.
I don't think he did. But, you know, even still, it's going to be – there were a lot of comparisons of – you know, with Yordan Ventura, you've heard a lot of comparisons between him and Pedro Martinez and Johnny Cueto. You know, they, you know, all from the Dominican Republic, all, you know, they're not the huge, you know, CC Sabathia, Randy Johnson types, are a little bit more sleight of frame, hard throwers.
But they're short.
Yeah.
Cueto's not really sleight of frame, but he's short.
That's true. That's what I mean. Yeah. That's a good correction. That's why you're Michael Engel, Twitter detective.
Right.
Definitely. So I think, you know, I think having that presence and Yordan Ventura being able to see how Johnny Cueto takes care of business, how he operates for the next 2+, hopefully, months. Well, definitely 2+ because the season goes into October this year, but
right.
Hopefully 3+ months. But seeing that, I think the Royals are banking on these next few months with Johnny Cueto having an impact with Yordan Ventura that lasts beyond this season, and maybe even Danny Duffy as well, even though Duffy appeared to be riding the ship, you know, in his last few starts. But I really think that there's kind of that extra added element of, okay, we can have someone who is a really good example for Yordan Ventura who can kind of help him because he's been through it. He struggled his first couple of years, like we just mentioned, with the Reds, Johnny Cueto did. So he's been there. He knows, and hopefully he can. So, I mean, Do you kind of get that feeling as well, Mike, or is there? Am I reaching here? Am I grabbing at straws?
I think it makes sense because we saw with Ventura, it's been inconsistent all year. He had the different blow-ups early. He's just had struggles, and sometimes you look on him. I'm not one for body language, but it does look kind of like he's either frustrated or just like something under the surface. And I've seen things. I think David Lesky tweeted this that Dayton Moore said at a luncheon that someone asked him about Ventura, and he said that maybe he's feeling a little bit of pressure to be that guy, because last year he made the team out of spring training as their fifth starter. Not a lot of pressure in that kind of situation. James Shields is there. You're the fifth guy. You just have to show up and help the team somehow. That's really all you have to do. But then in the offseason, James Shields departs. He signs the extension. He's the opening day starter. And now it's on him. Now he's a 24-year-old kid, and it's on him. And in some cases, guys, that they rise up to that, and some guys, they have to adjust to that. And I think it seems with Ventura, he's a guy who has had to adjust to that. I don't know if his early season stuff, the bean balls and the jawing at guys was part of that, but I think you could see it if you squint at it. So then if Cueto comes over, he's a guy who immediately takes that number one thing. He's the leader of the staff right now. Everybody else kind of can breathe a little bit. They know that they have that guy on their side. And Ventura doesn't have to go out there and feel the pressure to carry everybody on his shoulders. Plus, it helps that that guy is from his home country. I think that's going to be a big help, too, because, he idolizes Pedro Martinez. He's got to have a pretty good opinion of Johnny Cueto as well.
Right.
I mean, just... that's his countryman. I mean, he's growing up as a pitcher. That's one of the guys that he looks at. So,
and speaking the same language has probably gotta help. Not that your Donald Ventura obviously knows English and he can converse, but there's a little bit of an additional familiarity that being able to speak your own language and converse about heavy topics like how do I deal with this scenario.
It's probably it's much easier to do
in your home language, even your native language, I should say, even though. You may be able to speak, but speak English to talk with Danny Duffy about whatever, but not to say that that's an incredibly huge factor, but not one to be overrated either.
Yeah, I mean, they're still people, and that's so easy to forget in sports is that these guys are people, and they've got to go figure these things out as well. And Ventura still uses a translator with Guthrie, so I mean, maybe it'll be something that he is able to get some assistance from Cueto and Volquez, and it can help calm him down a little bit. And again, it just kind of it puts him again in a position where you've got Cueto, who's the number one. You've got Volquez, who's pitched well all season, been the most consistent starter. Duffy, in his last six starts since he came back from the DL, has gone 37 innings. So that's more than six innings a start. Which for him is very big.
That's
amazing.
For Duffy, there's not much more you can ask.
But he's also not given up many runs. And, two starts ago, he had start of his life in a situation where the Royals absolutely needed him to go deep into a game.
Yeah, eight innings? Yep.
Like the most he's ever thrown. And so it seems like Duffy's kind of back. So he's almost like your three. So if that puts Ventura as your number four, he can just kind of let it go there. And, he's already had the option. I don't see that as much of a wake-up call because they called him right back up. I think if they wanted him to learn a lesson about, how to get guys out or carry yourself or whatever people supposed it was, I don't think he was going to learn it in one stint down there anyway, but that they called him right back up is just like, okay. It's clearly an inventory problem more than we're ready to go with somebody else over him kind of issue.
Yeah, and I agree. I do think there is a little element of waking up to it, though, where it's just kind of like, okay, if I don't perform, they
will do it.
They will do this, So, it is what it is, kind of a thing. But it's just, I do think that pressure is going to make a big difference for him because I think that might be part of what they wanted him to work on down there. Not necessarily anything with his stuff because we've seen it.
Yeah, the stuff is good. It's just been his command and kind
of and
taking
I think part
care
of
the pitch.
I think part of it, you talked about dealing with different, you know, body language issues and that kind of thing. And kind of like you, you know, I try not to put too much stock in that because, you know, you can have bad body language. I mean, Irvin Santana, people commented on his body language all the time.
He was he just chilled out and it didn't matter.
You know, so it's different for every person. People react differently to different things.
Yeah, or it's the Danny Duffy, James Shields dichotomy where Shields, oh, he feeds off his emotions versus Duffy where it's like, oh, he doesn't need to be so emotional. It's like, okay, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's just one of them at one point was pitching very well and one was not.
Right,
it's results based. So
for sure. And, you know, but at the same time, there are points where you see, and there's Sam Mellinger wrote an article about this with different gifts that he had of Yordano Ventura's reactions and things on the Kansas City Star website. And, you know, he'll slam his glove. And, so, you know, that's, again, that's not out of the ordinary, but it is something where you think, okay, you know, maybe after having the season he had last year and, you know, being so young and signing the contract, maybe he did kind of think, man, I'm just going to get up and I'm going to strike everybody out and I'm going to be Yordano Ventura. Let's throw fire. And this is, you know, and then when things didn't go to plan, it's just like, why isn't this working?
Right.
And it, you know, when I do stuff that I think I'm good at, you know, which is very little, but if there is something out there and I'm trying to do it
and it doesn't go well,
working, then I'm start, you know, I don't actually constructively look at it and say, what am I doing wrong? And why isn't this working? And let's fix it. I'm just like, why isn't this working? And I keep doing the same thing. And then it gets inside my head. And it just, you know, so it's an easy trap to fall into. And I'm 7 years older than Yordano Ventura. So, you know, it's something that you just kind of have to learn to deal with. And I think he will. I've never had any reservations about Yordano Ventura's long-term future. You know, what he can do for this team this year, I've started to question. But yesterday, and as we're recording this, yesterday being Sunday, that start was very encouraging, and I think it's only going to get better as some of that pressure is lifted with Cueto. All the attention is going to be on Johnny Cueto for the next few months when it comes to pitching. So, like you said, Yordano Ventura as the fourth guy is going to be able to just sit back and let it rip, and that's what he does best.
I think it's going to be awesome.
I'm
so happy because this deal was, I mean, we talked about it last time on when we were at Kelly's for the All-Star watch party, and the thing that we brought up was that, okay, at that point, the Blue Jays, Astros, and Royals were reportedly the three most active teams in talking about Cueto. And the feeling that I think both of us had was that the Royals were going to have to compete against Houston to get him. Mm-hmm. And when you've got Houston, who has this bevy of big name prospects and highly regarded, and the Royals, whose system is kind of thinned out because of some trades and some guys graduating to the majors and things like that, or some guys just not panning out. Well, their system's not quite as deep as maybe they were in 2011, 2012, but they still managed to go and get this trade done, and they didn't give up one of their top four or five arguably top four or top five prospects.
Right,
which is kind of the amazing part. When the deal was even starting to be coming through, I was like, "Well, there goes Sean Manaea, or there goes Kyle Zimmer." I was pretty much set that one of those two was going to be involved, and neither ended up being involved.
I was even a little scared that Mondesi could have been the one, and
that's what it seemed like. It seemed like they were going to want to get Mondesi.
Because if you're the Reds, you can ask whatever you want because Cueto's that kind of pitcher.
Yeah, it's a
people are
going
to pay a premium. They have to pay a premium for that kind of a guy. But the fact that Dayton Moore could, like you just said, get Johnny Cueto without giving those top four guys, I mean, it's been amazing. The 180 that the fan base, myself absolutely 100% included, has done on Dayton Moore is insane. Like, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, you know, mid-season 2013, or even last year, when after they got swept by the Astros, right? You know, when the Astros were losing 100 games, not when they're, you know, fighting for a playoff spot like they are this year. What did we say? We came on this show and we're just like, you know, sell the James Shields, Eric Hosmer, get, you know, burn it down, and let's try this thing again. And, you know, Dayton Moore, to his credit, stayed the course, made some small acquisitions, strengthened up that bullpen, got to the playoffs, made a huge run, and it is, you know, that one game against the A's in the wild card has completely flipped the script on this organization and Dayton Moore, and he can't miss right now, and it is really, I mean, right now, this second, not taking in anything to account besides right now, this second, Dayton Moore has to be one of the top five GMs in the league right now. And, like, it's astonishing to me that I'm saying that. But, I mean, you think about the last 2 years. Start with the James Shields trade. And every move that he's made has just worked out, you know? I mean, you know,
pretty much.
Whether it's Jason Frazier and Ryan Madsen and Chris Young and Kendrys Morales and, you know, Alex Rios, he started off hot. And then he got injured, and he's actually been doing better this last month or so, or last few weeks, I should say. So jury's still kind of out on him because he missed a lot of time, and the injury that he had makes it really difficult to come back at full strength right away. So that's an undecided, but leaning towards a bad move. But all the rest of them, I mean, cutting bait with Billy Butler at seemingly the absolute perfect time. Signing Jason Vargas last year, At this time last year, looked like a great move. And then
he had a tough time coming back from the deal.
Yeah, he got a tough time. Vargas did coming back from the appendix. And then, Tommy John. So, you know, not really his fault, but he was performing adequately this year. And like you said, Volquez could be his best acquisition in terms of free agency. Then you look at, you know, all the players that, I mean, he made the trade to get Lorenzo Cain and Alcides Escobar too, so he gets credit for that. And then the changing of how they've developed players, and you've just kind of heard some whispers of this, nothing super concrete, but they have made some changes and they've kind of loosened up some of their rigid philosophies, and it's paying off because they've got players like, you know, Chester Cuthbert now, who can come up and shows he belongs. You know, Christian Colon even hasn't been, you know, neither of them have been setting the world on fire, but, you know, they've come up and they've filled in and they've done work. Paolo Orlando has had some huge moments for this team this year. So, I mean, right now, and this is me saying this, you've got to say that Dayton Moore is one of the top GMs in baseball. I'm not saying it's going to be like that 10 years from now, but
right,
I mean, right now, today, his marks are incredibly high. Disagree with me, please. Tell me I'm crazy.
Well, the sins of the past still happen. So some of those, I mean,
right,
he can, but he at least learned from them. You know, for so long he did.
That's the craziest thing.
Questionable roster construction and weird decisions and kind of over reliance on specific players and types of players. But he's
sort of
really,
weird ideology.
Yeah, he's really adjusted to like go for guys that he can get value out of, and you know, guys like Madsen, guys like Chris Young, where he recognized, you know, what this team's identity was and then like fit pieces within it. So, you know, you're not trying to reinvent the team by getting Kendrys Morales or Alex Rios. They're supplementing. You've already got your core guys on this team. So, you know, I think that's a testament. You know, he's able to construct a bullpen from spare parts pretty much just on a whim. Like you could almost take everybody out of the bullpen and just give him a year to rebuild a bullpen. He could probably build a top 10 bullpen just goofing around.
Yeah, I mean,
he just seems to have a way. He's always been able to do that. He was able to do that early on in his tenure, even with just random guys. So
however valuable of a skill that is, you can debate, but he's got it.
yeah, and I guess you can kind of do something with that. But I think it's also that, you know, as guys have developed, and, you know, a lot of these guys, Hosmer, Moustakas, you know, those are first-round picks. Perez and Escobar were, you know, Escobar was a top 15 prospect at one point, and Perez was a high riser and a top guy, and Kane was a top 10 guy from Milwaukee before the trade. So, I mean, they're getting guys with talent, but it's also talent that they've been able to get developed. And so, you know, all of those guys are mostly affordable guys. They don't have to go to the to free agency to get someone like John McDonald. He's a bad example. Who's the guy on the Yankees? The shortstop. I can't think of him now. I was thinking about him yesterday. He doesn't have to go out most of the time to fill starting roles with guys who are going to command $9 million a year because he's got those guys already in place. Now, Infante is kind of one guy, but, you know, Stephen Drew. That's the guy I was thinking of. Guy like Drew. Because one of the thought exercises I was thinking of recently was like, what if Dayton Moore had not traded Greinke in 2010 and hadn't gotten Kane, hadn't gotten Escobar? Who would be playing shortstop? I mean, Cologne maybe? Maybe. I don't know who'd be playing center. Maybe.
I don't know if they'd have a choice.
Maybe yeah.
Fascio?
I don't know.
Maybe they'd force their hand on that a little bit. Yeah, that's a good question. I'm glad we don't have to figure it out.
Yeah, but I mean, he's got those guys who developed into Kane's a legitimate superstar right now the way he's playing.
Oh, absolutely.
Escobar is a highlight reel, and so you know that helps that basis right there. But then they got James Shields, which I didn't like that deal. I think history has shown me to be pretty wrong on that.
Yeah,
but.
I'm with you.
At the time, what I remember, there was an anecdote. I think it was Jeff Passan probably wrote this because it's a very Passan type of thing to put in a story. But it was at the winter meetings in 2012, and Dayton Moore was talking to his staff, and they had their board of like top 20 prospects or whatever. And he erased Will Myers and he said, "Do we still have a good farm system?" And they said, "Yeah, we do." He raised Mike Montgomery. Do we still have a good farm system? Yes, we do. Jake Odorizzi, same question. Yes, we have a good farm system. And that's when they decided they could make the deal for James Shields and Wade Davis and Elliot Johnson, and they went and they did it, and it was criticized by a lot. But it worked out, and then they end up with, Odorizzi was part of that Greinke package. But once they made the World Series, it became clear that it was like, okay, yeah, you can trade those guys and still get, a pretty good team on the field and still have a farm system and still have some depth to deal from. And so that's kind of what's in play on this deal, because we haven't talked about the return that the Reds got. They traded Brandon Finnegan, John Lamb, and Cody Reed. And the thing that I noticed in that is that John Lamb was pretty much left for dead prospect wise. Tommy John surgery in 2011, never really recovered very well until just this year, but he's already 25. He's, pretty much one of those post hype guys that, okay, yeah, he was a top 20 overall guy 4 years ago, and now he's trying to work his way back. But then you have Finnegan and Reed, who were both drafted in 2013 for Reed and 2014 for Finnegan. And so even after trading Mike Montgomery and Jake Odorizzi and Will Myers, the Royals still have three guys they can trade off for an ace and still have their top four guys. So, I mean, that's a huge testament to what they've been able to build here, drafting smart, being able to develop guys, getting John Lamb the right kind of rehab to allow him to come back, to get Cody Reed to work on his control issues so that he can be a fast-rising prospect, to make them attractive to send to a team that wants to sell off their best pitcher. And I think that's the biggest turnaround I've seen, is that the prospect kind of, fetish that kind of happens on the internet doesn't really have to be there, because on one hand, they are just prospects. And, I'm not sure that the Royals are going to drastically miss any of the three guys they traded away. And they're very much going to be happy with Johnny Cueto, who they got.
Yeah, and that's been one of the most fascinating things to me, because I am convinced that the Royals could trade for Clayton Kershaw and they would be getting fleeced, according to half the fans, based on what they – now, if you actually traded for Clayton Kershaw, maybe you'd have to give up your entire farm
system.
So maybe you would be, but point being, the ability to make fans happy based on a trade is – you always know, not all fans are ever going to be happy. But until you see a deal like this that seems so perfect for both sides, do you really realize, that it truly is the case? Because, like you said, Lamb was kind of that post-hype type of thing. And I think John Lamb is going to have a fruitful Major League Baseball career.
I hope he does. I hope he's
absolutely.
Great.
He's been a great fantastic. Kid. He's really done.
He's worked his ass
off. He's worked so hard to battle back from the adversity that he's faced, and mm-hmm. it's such a testament to him that not only that he's knocking on the door to the majors, but that he could be used in a chip to get somebody like Cueto, you know, to battle back from where he was.
Yeah.
You know, it's phenomenal, and best of luck absolutely to him and all three players really. But you know, if we're gonna break it down. Brandon Finnegan, great story last year. TCU, Royals, World Series, same year. First person to ever be in the Major League and College World Series. Awesome stuff. Had some big moments in October for the Royals. He's probably, and I think the organization felt this way, which is why they were able to let him go, probably mm-hmm. was never going to be a starter for this team. Just yeah. probably wasn't. John Lamb, you know, like we just talked about, as much as he's been able to battle back and get himself back into the conversation, you know, his absolute ceiling, if he realized all of his potential, is probably a number three right now. And whereas, you know, before he had all his injuries and everything, it was more like a number one or two. But now it's probably a number three. And there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But that's the best you're going to get probably from him. And then Cody Reed, who really knows? We don't have enough of a sample size with him to really determine, you know, what they think. He's got a lot of potential, and yep. he was a good pick. But you know, he's shown some good stuff at Double A this year, but other than that, he hasn't been able to put a lot together. So you're really looking at like half a year's worth of good play from him, you know, and regardless of how good any of the three of them become, none of them, with the possible exception of Brandon Finnegan, were going to be able to help this team win a World Series this year. And Johnny Cueto absolutely can.
Yeah. I think the thing with Finnegan was that they really tipped off a lot. I mean, they should have tipped off that they really didn't feel that great about him as a starter early in the year when Finnegan started in Northwest Arkansas to just get the innings in, work on it, got two starts before the Royals called him up as kind of bullpen help to take the pressure off some and give some guys some rest. Two starts, and that was it. And he never went back into a starter routine. Because they just kept calling him up and sending him back down, calling him up and just doing that over and over. You know, and I don't think
it felt like Aaron Crow Redux.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, we want him to start, but we don't really think that he can. And so they're selling him at a point where they feel like he can still be perceived as a starter. And the Reds, for their, you know, they believe he can. And more power to him to try it.
Yeah, and the Reds are in a perfect position because all these guys – they're not in win-now mode, so all these guys are going to get those opportunities to develop and become starters that the window the Royals are trying for now, they don't have that luxury with these players, and the Reds do, so it's going to be beneficial for them.
Yeah, and they get the opportunity to just develop. It just seems like Finnegan, I mean, he's highly regarded, and he's going to be a good pitcher, and he's probably going to pitch a lot for the Reds. But I just don't see him as a guy that the Royals saw a lot of value in. And if they can recognize that other teams have more value or see more value in him than what they do themselves, it's smart to sell him off. A guy like John Lamb, a lot of people were on Twitter, they were kind of losing their minds when John Lamb's name came up as a possibility. All of a sudden, the John Lamb, who, you know, had fallen off the map, wasn't even really relevant until like May. All of a sudden, people are regarding him like he's Clayton Kershaw. I was just shocked. It's like people are like, no, we can't trade Lamb. I don't want to trade Lamb. We can't give up 6 years of Lamb. I'm like, John Lamb at different points this year, and I like John Lamb. I like him a lot. He's pitched great for Omaha, but at different times this year, the Royals have chosen to start Joe Blanton, Jeremy Guthrie, Johan Pino. They've chosen to call up guys like Aaron Brooks and Michael Marriott instead of John Lamb to pitch. I mean, they're very clearly choosing those guys over him. And not because they don't believe in him. I think if he'd have been pressed into it, they would have been okay to pitch him. But because they just felt like he wasn't quite ready and quite where they wanted him. And so it makes it a possibility to trade him off. So it's like, okay, let's go ahead and do it. I don't know where this idea that John Lamb all of a sudden is like the same guy
the
he was in 2011.
Indispensable, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, maybe he will be. Maybe he'll recapture it and he'll be pretty good. But there's no guarantee of it. And until he actually pitches in the majors, you don't know exactly how guys are going to see him. Plus, he's 25. Even if he is at the same level stuff-wise, you know, and everything as he was in 2011, he's 4 years older. And there's a certain level in baseball where, you know, age matters. The projection on him is going to be a lot. He's already a couple of years from probably his peak years.
Yeah, and, you know, he in 2011 when the Royals had best farm system ever, blah, blah, blah,
right.
He was the number 18th ranked prospect and in all of baseball, not
right,
just for
overall.
The Royals.
Yeah.
And right behind him at number 19 was Mike Montgomery. And Montgomery did not have Tommy John surgery. He didn't have an ankle problem when he came back from Tommy John surgery. He didn't have all this adversity that John Lamb went through. And it still took him till this year to get to the major leagues and actually do, you know, something of note. And that is just an illustration that whatever you think of a prospect means nothing. You know, obviously you can try and scout and you can try and project and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, we don't know. Mike Montgomery seemed like a surefire bet to be, you know, fast riser and all that stuff. And then he kind of stalled out. And so, you know, this idea that you people were, for whatever reason, were projecting John Lamb as to be some sort of savior to this organization, as good as I think he can be, that just wasn't him. So it's just kind of misplaced. It still feels like the Royals are kind of weeding out that old philosophy of the Royals are making a trade for somebody. They must be selling off their good pieces to try and get something else. You know,
right?
Like, that's not who the Royals are anymore.
Or
that's
the assumption that Dayton Moore is making a mistake.
Yeah, you know, and I don't blame any Royals fan for having that. It's as Sam Mellinger would say, they come by that type of thing honestly.
Sure.
But at the same time, you know, we can snap ourselves out of it. We don't have to be that fan base anymore. We can look at this objectively and say, this is a pretty good trade. You know, there were some people that, you know, more media types and talking about quotes from GMs and stuff saying that the Royals overpaid. And personally, I don't see it. But if you want to talk to me about possibility of Cody Reed and John Lamb, and maybe let's just throw them all three in there, Brandon Finnegan being, you know, mid to back end of the rotation starters, and controlling them for the next 6 years, all of them, okay.
Yeah,
you know, then you've got a bit
of
an argument
value,
because that's a lot of value in Major League Baseball. But as we know from Mike Montgomery, John Lamb, Chris Dwyer, all the rest, you know, the odds of that happening all three of those players is very slim. So, you know, chances are one of those three will develop into a quality Major League starter. One of the three will probably be a decent reliever. And one of the three will probably not really spend much time playing baseball. That's just kind of the odds, you know. So if you're the Royals, that's an acceptable risk to give up that unknown, both the high and the low part of it, for a known commodity in Johnny Cueto.
Yeah, and if you're giving up the guys that you yourself know, you know, are not your top projected guys, that's pretty good. I think a guy even like Cody Reed, we haven't talked a lot about him because he's kind of fallen in that Royals are winning games prospect dead zone that we've talked about before. But, you know, he came in and he walked 7 batters per 9 innings in rookie ball, you know, out of community college as a draft team. And then it wasn't until about this year that he really got a lot of things together. But a lot of his best results were in Wilmington, which is notoriously friendly to pitchers. So it's always been interesting to see how Royals prospects in particular go when they make that jump from high A to double A, because it's Wilmington in the Carolina League, which is very pitcher and defense friendly, to the Texas League in Northwest Arkansas, which is not friendly really at all to those kind of guys. And so that's a big adjustment that you have to make. And he was pitching well. It's not to say that, you know, he got hammered in double A. He was pitching well, but to see him against a more neutral or even offensive friendly environment, that'll be interesting too. So I don't think the Royals, I mean, like you said, if they end up trading off three guys who start for 6 years for Cincinnati at, you know, major league minimum / arbitration rates, yeah, that's probably a lot of value that the Royals traded away. But at the same time, the Royals also feel like they have guys behind them who can fill in those kind of innings. I mean, it's not just we've developed guys that we can trade off, but we've developed guys that we can trade off and have developed guys who can fill in for the guys that we've traded off, which they've already demonstrated between the Shields and the Cueto trade. So I think that's just amazing for the Royals, considering, especially when you talk about like the Royals in pitching development and their kind of track record in that. I mean, they haven't really gotten a lot of these guys to the point where they're beasts. I mean, Ventura is probably their best success story. Danny Duffy's right there as far as like starting pitching in the majors, unless you want to count Jake Odorizzi, who's done well, or Mike Montgomery, who's starting his major league career off pretty well, and kind of give the Royals partial credit. But they're at least getting guys who are performing well enough in the minors to be regarded well by scouts and executives and things like that. And that counts for something. I mean, it obviously got them Johnny Cueto at this point.
Yeah, that's what's been another thing that's so impressive, because ever since the best farm system in baseball days of 2011, the kind of, I guess you, I don't know word I'm searching for, retaliatory narrative, I suppose you could say, has been the, you know, oh, Royals farm system is depleted now and it's nothing type of thing, you know. Right. And you know, it's obviously like many things somewhere in between, but it's quite impressive that as many graduations as the Royals have had in the last 2+ years to the majors, as many trades as they've made, and they still have three very good pitching prospects who, you know, despite some spotty history, you know, if they put things together, could have some good value. And they've still got this, you know, when you look at, okay, the window for this organization is probably about 2017 to win the World Series, right? And it starts at the end of this year with the impending contract situation between Alex Gordon as he goes into free agency. Well, you know, if you look, what are the Royals' options if they can't sign him? Right, let's go and get somebody else. Obviously, that's option number one. But your second option is, you know, the Royals still have after that trade players like Jorge Bonifacio, Brett Eibner, and Bubba Starling, who you may remember from being drafted in 2011
from such games Northwest Arkansas.
Northwest Arkansas plays the Memphis Redbirds, whatever. But anyway, I think Memphis is actually a AAA team, but that's okay. Point being, you know, and Bubba Starling has done a lot to improve his stock this year. And defensively speaking, I think Bubba Starling right now today can be a more than adequate replacement for Alex Gordon. I mean, he's always been regarded as a very, very toolsy defensive player who has a high, high ceiling. And so that, you know, it's just a question of whether his offense can pick it up. And this year he's taken a lot of strides, and it's been quite impressive. So, you know, they've still got that. And then you look at, you know, what about, you know, losing Mike Moustakas or Eric Hosmer or whatever in a couple of years? Well, you know, you've got Chester Cuthbert, who's shown this year that he belongs.
24, 25 at that point.
Yep. You know, he's still really young. And, you know, then when you lose Volquez and Vargas and Cueto, and you've got Almonte and Manaea and Zimmerman, like we talked about, the odds are all three of those pitchers aren't all going to make it and be productive. But, you know, point being that they still have options in the minor leagues that are good, solid options that, you know, a team like the Tigers, if they made the equivalent trade to get somebody like Johnny Cueto, I mean, I don't even know if they have the farm system to do that right now because they're so depleted. I mean, there's truly.
I don't know. They just.
It's been one of the worst in baseball last year.
Just today, they had Shane Green, who was in their rotation, had 6 point some ERA. They moved him to the bullpen. The guy they called up to fill his spot was Buck Farmer, who is.
Buck Farmer.
I don't even know what Buck Farmer is. I don't know what that is.
Like a porn star, but I think it's a big player.
Right. So, I mean, that's where they're at. They don't have that guy who's like close to major league ready to come in and end up, you know, carrying a staff or even filling in as like their fifth guy. And maybe, you know, just their guys are all in A-ball and whatever, but that's still, like, those are guys that you're still dreaming on. So I just don't – it's just tough for them to compete in that area, especially when, you know, they're also in a spot where they're kind of in no man's land to decide on if they want to actually sell or if they want to buy. I think they're going to start selling, so – I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see that.
Yeah, I think they're going to sell as well, but it will be definitely interesting to pay attention to that moving forward.
Yeah, they'd be looking for a similar kind of thing, that kind of deal that the Reds got, where you can get maybe three guys who can be starters.
Yeah, possibly.
Because, I mean, they've got so much money tied up and stuff.
Yeah.
And pitching is always the biggest investment you end up on.
And Price could probably actually get a little bit more because there's only a handful of people in the league that are better than Johnny Cueto. Price just happens to be one of them.
Right, and the market so, the market just lost a commodity that was available. Yeah. So
he's still only a rental, but a very, very good one at that. So here's a question, Mike, and I put this out on Twitter, my thoughts on this, and kind of got roasted a little bit. But I'm curious, so feel free to disagree with me here. But I also think, just based on the Reds' MO with Johnny Cueto, that I don't. I gotta think if they're gonna sign him. I think the initial layer, like we talked about, really good pitcher. We know.
Right.
The second layer we talked about possibly mentoring some of the younger pitchers they have and kind of shoring up the rotation that way, taking some pressure off, helping them figure things out, kind of the James Shields role. Then I think the third layer would be that. They wouldn't at least, if they weren't going to at least give, had some sort of inkling that they could possibly work out some way to re-sign Johnny Cueto, they wouldn't make this deal. And my reasoning behind that is because I know Cueto is going to be expensive, obviously. We've already talked about how good he is and pitchers get crazy money.
Right.
But the Royals are in, they made the World Series last year. they're in uncharted territories for the organization as it currently stands. You know, obviously, 30 years ago, but nobody involved in the organization had anything to do with that run of Royals baseball. So this current run is a little bit different. I'm not saying they will sign Johnny Cueto or anything, but you know, just based on how they operate and how rentals kind of aren't really their MO, I kind of think they're at least going to make a run at him, whatever that may be, and that they at least think that there's greater than non-zero chance that they could actually get him to stay here in Kansas City, especially with Volquez here next year.
I think they're going to talk to him. I think at a certain point that they're going to talk to him, but I don't know if they have really good odds to sign him at all. I don't know if they're going to be really aggressive on going after him, especially if they feel like they are better off using their time and those resources to get Alex Gordon signed to another deal.
Okay.
He's going to be available too. And I think if they have to choose, they probably would feel more comfortable giving Gordon the money because, one, he's known. Two, it's less of a fragile position, I guess. Plus, Cueto's got, you know, 2013 and 2011, he had injuries to his lat muscles. That cost him a lot of time. This year he's even had like some elbow stiffness that they did an MRI on. It was fine and he's pitched fine since, but there was that concern. So I think they will probably float something out there. I bet it'll probably be pretty quickly dismissed in whatever negotiation. I just don't think they'll have, I think they're going to prioritize their time differently.
So I am going to do something that we hardly ever do on this show, and that's go off on a slight bit of a tangent here.
Okay.
But
Go figure.
So you mentioned Alex Gordon being a free agent next year, and obviously I want Alex Gordon to be a Royal forever. Love the guy.
Right.
But that being said, how much is Alex Gordon worth to you or – to this team, let's say. Because here's – I'm going to lay it out for you, and you tell me how stupid I am. But
okay.
I got to think – that's something you're very good at. I gotta think Gordon, with what he's been able to do and his reputation, can command upwards of $15 million a year pretty easy. That's yeah. not a ton in today's baseball.
Yeah.
So the question becomes, do the Royals feel like Gordon is valuable enough to put – I mean, just last year, as much as they love James Shields, and you know the organization loved James Shields, a five-year, $75 million contract – seemed like it was too much for James Shields. And I can't remember what his final numbers were on the contract he signed, but it was close to that.
It was like 4 for $80 or something like that.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, a little bit more than that, but they paid a premium to get a shorter term.
Yeah.
So is Alex Gordon, to you, worth going down the five-year, $75 million range? Because he's 30. This year?
Mm-hmm.
So he'd be 35 by the end of that. You know, typically a hitter's prime is in that 27 to 32 range, right? So if you're, you know, the really good players and the ones that take really good care of themselves can extend beyond that. And Gordon, we all know, takes impeccable care of himself.
He's probably in the best shape of anyone in America.
Yeah. I mean, you can probably go beyond that a little bit. But I mean, even right now, as good as he is, you know, he's prone to slumps, and he's more that – a couple of years ago we thought he might be that 325 home run, you know, 100 RBI guy after, you know, 2011, 2012-ish. But he's kind of settled into more of that 260 with pop and good on-base skill role. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that. But when you start talking 15-plus million a year – and what that means for signing other players, like trying to sign Mike Moustakas and Eric Hosmer and Lorenzo Cain. You know, personally right now, I put more value into Lorenzo Cain than Alex Gordon. So if your question is, does Gordon hamstring you for Cain in the future? I mean, do you let him go? Like right now, I'm really on the fence, and I'm leaning towards, I don't want to say a lowball offer, but not trying to meet the market or surpass the market with Alex Gordon, because, you know, you're going to get the tail end with the next contract. You're going to get him past his prime, and you're going to be sinking a lot of money into him. And how long do you want to keep this window going? How much freedom do you have? So that's a tough situation.
That is kind of tough. But I hadn't really considered Cain as part of that equation either. And that's even more interesting, because with Cain, he's you know, 29. He's older than Billy Butler even, which a lot of people would be surprised about, because he's not really been around that long, and so you assume he's younger. And I'm not sure with a guy like Cain, who has had, you know, limited exposure, at least as a teenager and whatnot, to baseball, how much of this sustains as, you know, his current level. I think he's probably got the work ethic and the talent to keep it going, but it's also one of those things. There was a question just this off season is, you know, how much he would regress. People just assumed that he was going to just fall into that pretty kind of above average hitter, but great defense kind of guy. And now he's just a great offensive performer. I don't know. That's tough. I kind of feel like with Gordon, just in a vacuum, if you feel like he can give you three or more wins per year, wins above replacement, you can sign him to kind of a market type of deal, because, you know, he's going to give you more value. He's going to give you surplus value early in the contract, say through the first 3 years of a 6-year deal or something, than in the back end. And plus, if he can age well, like a guy like Torrey Hunter has, who's been productive, or even Beltran up until about last year, then I think you can feel pretty comfortable. And I think his work ethic kind of shows that he's probably going to be worth a deal like that. His defense may fall off, and that's going to cost some value. But if that means that he gets more power and walks, well, then that's okay. I mean, you kind of trade it off. And I think he's still going to have the arm, and I think the defensive instincts will be there. The range may not be there. So that's another element.
Yeah, but the instincts can make up for a lot of that range. You know, we saw with, as you mentioned, Torrey Hunter. You know, he was still able to play that Gold Glove defense, you know, well late into his career.
He's kind of a train wreck now.
Yeah, like, he seems like a pretty awful guy, and I wouldn't want to.
Yeah, I'm surprised he doesn't DH more than he does. So I don't know. I think I feel comfortable with Gordon. I feel comfortable going, you know, in that $16-17 million a year range, if that's what it takes, for 5 or 6 years. It's a lot, and it's a contract they haven't really given anybody ever, really. But it's also Alex Gordon, who is a guy, if he does sign that, he's in, like, statue retired number territory, almost, if he stays productive. I mean, he's, you know, consummate Royal, lifelong guy, a guy you just don't see do that anymore in the mold of Brett and Frank White and guys like that. And I think that might factor into it too for him. I don't know. I mean, it's tough to tell. I mean, there's so much where it's like, yeah, he loves it in Kansas City, he's always been a Royals fan, but money talks. So it's tough. I think they're gonna have a really good shot, and if they don't get him, I think they're gonna be the runner-up when it comes down to it. But that's, you know, that's an interesting thing to look at. And you know, in regards to Kane, yeah. I guess if you have to choose one or the other, I don't know. I mean, Kane's playing so well, but there's not as much of a track record or the resume building up to this that there was with Alex Gordon, who was, you know, National Player of the Year in college, Minor League Player of the Year in 2006, a top 5 overall prospect, rebuilt himself into a 3-time All-Star, going to be 5-time Gold Glove Award winner. That's tough. I mean, that's Sophie's choice, I guess. Dayton's choice, I guess. Dayton's but they also do have Kane in some arbitration years here coming up, so that kind of helps a little bit where they don't have to make the decision on him quite as soon, and things can change. So, you know, that kind of helps. You know, they don't really have to worry. They can kick that can down the road a little bit. And see what happens with Kane. And if he continues this year and next year, then you can, well, I guess that wouldn't factor into their Gordon decision if he's doing it next year. But, you know,
oh, good Lord.
The urgency isn't really there. What?
Kendrys Morales just hit a 3-run double. Two-run double. Still. Hosmer single. Yeah, I'm just getting updates on my phone. I'm not watching like you, so.
It was a nice.
Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, it's fine. I was watching it too.
7-1, they're winning now.
It was fantastic. A nice little rip, so.
But yeah, okay.
I'm not sure on those guys.
With that, I think we'll table our Johnny Cueto discussion. We'll have plenty more to talk about with Johnny Cueto after his first start. Hopefully, it'll be this Friday against Toronto, so we'll be able to talk about it and review it ad nauseum on the show next week. We're going to take a quick break, and then when we get back, we're going to talk about how the Royals may, in fact, not be done in terms of the trade market. So stick with us, and we'll talk more about that on the other side.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is Jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. No love letters, talking to the wall. Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends, the best pizza in Kansas City, and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks for sticking with us through that break. Folks, we talked a lot about Johnny Cueto, a lot about Johnny Cueto in that first section. And now, an interesting, perhaps even, definitely not more interesting than getting Johnny Cueto, but a little tidbit that got overlooked in all the excitement is the fact that in kind of interviews talking about Cueto and the acquisition, Dayton Moore literally said, "We're not done yet." And they're still looking at options. I mean, after that, it was kind of the standard deal. You know, we're not done yet. Oh, we're looking for always open anyway to improve our team, blah, 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 you know, whatever. So two rumors have come out. One, that the Royals are interested in Martin Prado of the Miami Marlins. And I don't know how realistic that is. I don't know how willing the Marlins are to part with him. I mostly kind of dismissed that one. But the one that's really kind of caught fire in terms of the rumor mill is Ben Zobrist. And we've talked a lot about Zobrist just over the last, you know, month and a half or so, especially ever since Gordon's gotten hurt. Mm-hmm. So Zobrist, former All-Star, who has – I mean, Zobrist is so fascinating to me because I don't know that I've ever seen a player who is as good as he is that can literally play – every position and do it well. You know, like some players will just, that's kind of their selling point, like, hey, this guy can play every position, he's just absolutely god awful at right field or whatever, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, it's like, oh well, I can,
he's
play
not
right
really field. Good at second base, but you can put him there.
Yeah, Eric Hosmer can play right field, but he ain't gonna be any good,
right? Mike Avilas is playing left field a lot this year, but you don't want to watch him do it.
No. But Zobrist is that guy where you're like, he can play right field, put him out there. He can play shortstop, put him there. Second base, put him there. I mean, you don't necessarily want to bank your defense on him in like center field or shortstop or anything, but if you need him to play, he can play in a pinch and you're not going to lose a ton. And that is incredibly valuable, and he brings a lot to the plate, which is, I mean, he'd be a great fit for literally any team because of that very reason. And so a lot of teams are in on the Ben Zobrist sweepstakes, if you will, because the Oakland's selling right now. But the Royals have been noted as one of the ones that are very interested, and even some that I saw reported as aggressively pursuing Ben Zobrist. So when you hear that, Mike, on the heels of the Johnny Cueto trade, I mean, what's your thought here? What's the initial reaction, and then what do you think it's going to take to make a deal like that get done?
Well, the thing is, the trade market really turned very strange in that there are a lot of big names out there. Scott Kazmir's already been traded. Tyler Clippard was traded earlier today out of the A's bullpen. You know, Hamels is probably going to get moved. There's Jeff Samardzija might get traded. So many of these guys, Mike Leake, Giovanni Gallardo, Price, you know, who knows? So many pitchers. There's a lot of pitchers available. There's a lot of, like, good average kind of guys who can round out a rotation who are available. So just by the economics of it, it makes that a little easier for teams to acquire because they have more options to go around. But one thing is, Ben Zobrist, if you're looking at him as a second baseman, he can play second base. The rest of the second base market is really thin. There's just not a lot out there.
Yeah.
Martin Prado is probably the next best guy.
Do you know, just a side note really quick, what's Ben Zobrist's natural position? Do you know? I don't know.
I don't know.
I think he's an infielder.
He's mostly,
like, by trade.
But I think second base and corner outfield has been most of it, but I don't know what he broke into, really. I mean, he's always played everything, so it's just tough to to really peg that. I just don't know his early days that well. But I think that makes guys like Zobrist and hitters especially a little bit more of a commodity. And so if you get a guy like Zobrist who literally makes your team better in a lot of ways, you know, you can use him as an outfielder. The Royals can use him until Alex Gordon gets back. And then they can use him for Infante. Or they can switch him between outfield and second base, you know, and things like that. Yeah, that's really valuable for a team like the Royals, who can kind of fill in with Orlando and Dyson and Rios while Gordon's out, but maybe don't want to. But they can also use him at, you know, second base for Infante if he gets back to struggling. So, I mean, he is immensely valuable. He makes literally any team that could get him better. There's no team that does not improve by Ben Zobrist. The thing is, Oakland knows that. And so you've got every contender basically is probably called on him because he can do so many different things. And that means that you've got to compete against all of those guys. So if, say, New York is willing to give up this, this, and this, you've got to beat that offer to get him. And so I think the Royals, I could see that the Royals would give up maybe a little bit more for Zobrist than what they gave up for Cueto, just right. because they have to. Like, the next option is so much. I mean, Prado's pretty good, and he's hit okay. He's had some injuries this year, and he's
still
old.
Sub 700 OPS, though.
Yeah, but he's also still an improvement over Infante. So, I mean, if you're looking just as a second baseman or an infielder, yeah, that's okay. But the preference is going to be for Zobrist, and that's for everybody, really. And so that makes it, you know, difficult to kind of gauge something that's going to be affordable, I guess, or comfortably affordable for the Royals.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the one where you're probably losing somebody of
those
some
top
stature.
Four, Manaea, yeah, like Zimmer, one of those, Almonte, one of those guys is gone.
Right, probably one of those. I don't know if they would be thinking to get, Mondesi.
I don't think the Royals would do it, even if that's what they want.
Yeah, and I think there's a certain point where it's like, yeah, we could do that, but we're not going to do that, and they would know to just kind of like, okay, well, realistically, we have to ask, but we're not necessarily going to get him. So I don't know. I mean, I think Jorge Bonifacio is a guy who's kind of been out there. He's kind of feels like surplus when you've got guys like Orlando performing, when you've got Bubba Starling kind of reemerging, and when his average in contact is really kind of he's hitting like 235. He's got more power because I think his hand is healthy again, which was the issue the last couple of years. But at the same time, it's like, you know, he's not lighting the world on fire. He's still only 24, so that's okay. But it's just not the same kind of deal as, you know, somebody who kind of has a ceiling of Bubba Starling or who maybe is starting to get some polish like Brett Eibner. So I'm thinking something in there where you're going to lose one of those top four guys. Some of the kind of the depth guys, that second tier of prospects, you know, you're probably going to give up three top 20 guys, I would say, at least for Zobrist. But I think you'd immediately get better at second base. You'd probably be better at outfield. Although guys like Rios, Dyson, and Orlando have all performed pretty well since Gordon went down. And Gordon's going to be back in like 5 or 6 weeks anyway. So you can kind of tread water at that point.
Yeah, and you know, if you could pull off something like a Zobrist, I mean, then you're looking at you got, first of all, a myriad of options.
Two of the biggest trade chips, and the Royals could potentially get both of them.
And if you can do it all without upsetting the major league roster,
right?
I should say upsetting it in a negative way. If you got rid of Alex Rios or Omar Infante because of Ben Zobrist, then you'd be doing it in a positive way. But I mean, you could basically platoon Zobrist at like six positions, mm-hmm. and you know, with with Gordon out, you could mainly put him in left field probably for the time being, and then when Gordon comes back, you can maybe platoon him to kind of ease Gordon in, or you could, you know, have him switch around in right field with the Rios, Dyson, Orlando. That even though one of them is probably going to go down when Gordon comes back, and then you can shift him around with Omar Infante, and you can give, you know, Escobar, you can give him
a
rest.
You might be able to give him a day off.
Yeah, believe it or not.
Go figure.
So it's just,
well, and
it would
mixing Gordon into that mix too is probably going to be September. So at that point, rosters expand. So
yeah,
it's a little less of a crunch, but you still have to get there, obviously.
Right. So I mean, Ben Zobrist, if you were to get him, you're basically taking the Royals right now have seven decent to very good hitters, right?
Yeah,
you just go straight through. you know, starting with Escobar, then Moose, Hosmer, Morales, you know, if throwing Gordon into that mix still. But, mm-hmm. you know, then you got Gordon, Perez. So your only kind of weak spots being Rios, who is starting to play better, but still not that great.
Right.
And then Infante, who's been terrible all season offensively. So you're taking one of those and you're plugging in an 800 OPS player in that role. So then you move to having, you know, on any given day, 7 or 8 really good hitters and mm-hmm. amazing defense. And then Johnny, I mean, they don't need him to be the favorites to win the American League. But if they did, no. I mean, good God.
Yeah.
And you still keep the bullpen intact? That's the thing, because the bullpen is what this whole thing is centered around, and they haven't had to trade away a closer or really, you know, Wade Davis or something like that. They've been able to keep it intact. So just adding around, I mean, oh, man, yeah. it's such an odd feeling.
It's uncharted territory for sure. I think that Zobrist would he does so much. I mean, it's just – you can do anything with him. You can put him wherever. He can spell anybody in the infield. He can play anywhere in the outfield. Probably don't want him in center, but the Royals have 3 guys who can play center field, so it's okay. You don't need to put him in center field. So I think he's definitely the target. If the Royals got him, he's another perfect fit for a team like the Royals. He fits 2 areas of need. You know, obviously can't play them both, but I mean, they could use another outfielder and they could use a second baseman, and he can do both of those. He's also a switch hitter, so I mean, it's like he's literally the most versatile man on the planet. Yeah,
he's
a
Swiss Army knife of a baseball player.
He really is. He can probably sing and dance and do everything else. It's just, you know, he's just a heck of a player, and that makes the value so great. So. You know, I think the Royals are going to pay a lot if they want to get him, but I'd be happy if they did it as long as they didn't give up like 2 of those top 5 guys. Like I'd be fine with, you know, Almonte or even, you know, considering also that I assumed that the Royals were going to have to give up Manaea or Zimmer to get Cueto and didn't. You know, if you're looking at a thing where you give up Manaea, Bonifacio, I don't know who else you might give up, some guy. Lamb, Finnegan, and Reed to get Cueto and Zobrist. I think overall, that's, you know, a pretty good deal for your major league team.
Yeah, I mean, well, I don't know how much I want to think about it because it's just too
it's too tantalizing.
Man. Yeah, I mean, the Royals were it's just so insane to think about it. The Royals are the best team in the American League,
and they got
and
better.
Clearly the second best team in baseball after this last week, where they took 2 out of 3 from the Pirates and 2 out of 3 from Houston, and showed the Cardinals that even though the Cardinals are probably, you know, consensus number one team, the Royals are right there,
yeah.
you know, because they. But anyway, so that's all been proven, and that was before they picked up Cueto, and before any other additional possible Ben Zobrist signing. And personally, you know, we mentioned Martin Prado and some other, you know, people that might be available or whatever, but personally I think that the Royals are in a position where they know they don't need to make a move. So if they don't get Zobrist, I don't think they'll get anyone. I think they're kind of all or nothing on him because they know they don't need him necessarily because they're don't going so well right now and they have confidence in the team. So I don't know that it'll end up being somebody, just a matter of who. It'll be if they can get the Zobrist deal done. That's my thought.
Yeah, and at least it gives them the freedom to walk away if it ends up that they're asking for Zimmer and Almonte and whoever else. I mean, it gives them that chance to say, "Nah, we're gonna pass." You know, you can walk away from it and feel okay and comfortable with everything. And I think Prado is kind of the same deal. I mean, he's not as flexible. He only hits right-handed. He's been injured. He's kind of got a little less potential. And the Marlins seem to be asking for a lot, too, reportedly. So I don't know how realistic he is. I think that's another easy one where the Royals are like, all right, you're getting a little too high on your demands there. We're gonna talk to other people and just see what happens from there. Because, you know, there's no real push to go do it. I think they've been encouraged in the last month by the outfielders because Orlando's played at a pretty okay level. Rios has woken up. Dyson's gotten on base. His average doesn't look good, but he's gotten on base, and he's stolen a lot of bases, like 7 bases in the last, I don't know, last month maybe. So I think that's something that they've lessened the look for an outfielder, because at different points we were talking about guys like Carlos Gomez and Gerardo Parra and even Josh Reddick and guys like that as options, and now they're really not coming up in discussions as much through reporters or Twitter or anything. So I don't know that it's as big of a worry as it might have been a month ago. So, which is on one hand pretty good, because that gives them the opportunity to put their resources and time to getting someone like Zobrist and being able to focus on that and not having to scramble to find anybody, and can just kind of do their thing and keep leading the American League.
Yeah. So with that, I think I'm kind of tapped out on Royals dialogue. Do you have anything else that you wanted to discuss?
Johnny Cueto starts on Friday, and that's cool.
He does. Yes, indeed. Against the Toronto. Unfortunately, it's not at home. It's in Toronto, but his first August 10th, I believe, for his first home start. Is that right?
I think that's kind of the guess. Yeah. The Royals are on this 10-game road trip now. So, it's going to be tough, but yeah, I think August 10th or 11th. It depends on if they decide to skip somebody in the rotation or like bump somebody back, or how they – I don't know how they're going to do that. We didn't really talk about
it. There's an off day in there, so they can kind of play around a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not sure how the rotation is going to look once he gets here, but, you know, better.
Yeah.
I just don't know who all the players are going to be in it. So,
all right, well, with that, we'll end the show tonight. We have – as this is Monday, July 27th, Friday is the 31st, and that is the end of the trade deadline. There is still the waiver trade deadline that ends August 31st, but
that's not to worry about right now.
So by next week, we'll know if Zobrist thing came to fruition or not, and we'll know where the Royals stand as they look to move towards September, October, and, you know, fingers crossed, November, as the World Series would be in November this year for part of it. So with that, we'll leave you. Thanks for stopping in. I am Jeff Herr. With me, of course, has been Michael Engel. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport. And thanks for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.